When Wall Street Gives Retail What It Wants.
Which is a great title, by the way.
Right. It just hooks you. And the immediate catalyst for this entire deep dive is this brand new ETF that just launched. The ticker symbol is DRAM, like D-R-A-M.
Ah, yes. The DRAM fund.
Yeah. And the whole pitch is that it gives you, the retail investor, this highly concentrated exposure to memory chip producers. So we're talking about, you know, SK Hynix, Micron, Samsung.
Heavy hitters.
Exactly. The companies that are basically building the physical infrastructure for the whole AI boom. Because, you know, high bandwidth memory is like the critical bottleneck right now for training these massive AI models. So on paper.
It sounds perfect.
Right. It sounds like a total guaranteed home run. The sector is incredibly hot. The narrative makes total sense. And I mean, everybody wants a piece of the AI action.
They do. It sounds like a guaranteed winner. But, and this is the core premise of Anti-Gravity's whole piece, the underlying mechanics of how these specific products are built suggest that it's actually, well, it's a remarkably well-designed trap.
A trap. Wow.
Yeah. When Wall Street packages a hot sector into a neat four-letter ticker symbol for retail investors, they are emphatically not discovering some new hidden opportunity.
Right.
They're responding to demand that has already priced the opportunity in. The ETF only exists because the massive wealth-generating run-up has already happened. Mm. You're essentially buying the financialization of nostalgia.
Yeah.
You know, you're buying yesterday's return.
That is such a harsh way to put it, but I love it. Financialization of nostalgia. To really understand how this trap works, though, we need to look at the mechanical reality of creating an ETF. Because I think normal investors tend to think of ETFs as these fluid instant things, like an app update.
Oh, absolutely. They think someone just pushes a button.
Right. But creating a new thematic ETF is this slow, deeply bureaucratic machine. It's not instant at all. You have to draft a prospectus. You have to argue with a team of lawyers about the precise wording of your risk disclosures.
Man, that takes forever.
It takes so long. And then you're filing endless rounds of paperwork with the SEC. Plus, you have to pay an index provider, secure seed capital from some institutional backer, and spin up this massive marketing budget.
Right. And that timeline, that is the silent killer here.
Yeah.
Because by the time that neat thematic product actually rings the opening bell at the New York Stock Exchange, I mean, 6 to 9 months have passed since the idea was first greenlit.
Wow. 6 to 9 months.
Exactly. And during those months, the market hasn't just been standing still. The underlying stocks have been aggressively bid up by institutional algorithms, hedge funds, early retail speculators. So by the time the ETF actually launches, it's no longer a contrarian bet.
It's not a secret anymore.
No. What's fascinating here is that it has become the absolute highest form of consensus.
The highest form of consensus. It's like, okay, think of it like seeing a massive corporate brand finally use an internet meme in a TV commercial.
Oh, that's a perfect analogy.
Right. Like by the time it clears all the legal and marketing hurdles to reach the public, the trend is completely over. Yeah. It's uncool now. You are buying what is universally acknowledged by everyone to be a good idea.
And in financial markets, when everyone agrees something is a great idea, the price reflects that. You are paying maximum premium.
So if buying these highly anticipated ETFs means buying at the absolute peak of consensus and paying that premium, we really need to look at the math. What actually happens when retail investors finally get their hands on these things?
The data drop on this is just staggering.
It really is. So Anti-Gravity pulled this massive data set. They looked at 83 different niche and thematic ETFs launched between 2015 and 2024. And the results, honestly, they're brutal.
Oh, they're brutal.
60% of these niche ETFs underperformed the S&P 500 in their first 3 months. 60%.
Yeah, and it gets worse. 61% underperformed at the six-month mark. The median niche ETF actually trailed the broad market by 3.2% after just half a year.
Because that initial speculative momentum is just completely exhausted the moment the ink dries on the prospectus.
But wait, okay, let's unpack this for a second. Because aren't ETFs supposed to be the safest, most reliable way to invest?
Mm-hmm.
Like, buying the S&P 500 in an ETF wrapper is incredibly efficient. So why does applying that exact same wrapper to a specific niche violently change the math?
That's a vital distinction to make. We aren't talking about broad market index funds here. The structural wrapper of an ETF is completely neutral.
Right. It's just a bucket.
Exactly. It's just a bucket. The capital destruction comes from what is put inside that bucket. And more importantly, the psychological reason it was packaged in the first place. The data actually separates these 83 ETFs into three very distinct categories to explain this.
Okay. Let's go through the buckets. Sure. So the first bucket is what we call industry funds. These target subsectors with tangible economic output. Think cybersecurity or cloud computing.
Like real, actual businesses.
Exactly. They represent genuine, ongoing economic activity, cash-flowing businesses. And these actually hold their own pretty well. They have a 54% win rate against the broader market with a slight positive alpha meaning outperformance of about 1.8%.
Okay, so a slight win.
Right. But then we get to the second bucket, and this is where the damage really begins. Thematic funds.
Ah, the narrative ones.
Yes. These are designed to chase a transient retail-driven narrative. Think the metaverse or cannabis or SPACs.
Oh, man, SPACs. The special purpose acquisition companies, basically just blank check shell companies that IPO'd with zero actual business.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Promise to, like, buy something cool later.
Exactly. Pure narrative. And these thematic funds are disastrous. They only have a 39% win rate, and they actively destroy capital with a negative 15.9% average alpha in their first year.
Negative almost 16%. Why does a thematic fund fail so much harder than an industry fund?
Because they are structurally designed to write a story, not earnings. When a narrative like the metaverse takes off, retail money just floods in indiscriminately. And this drives the valuations of those underlying companies to levels completely disconnected from their actual revenue or profit.
So it's all hype.
Pure hype.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually gravity takes hold. Institutional investors recognize the massive overvaluation and start shorting the underlying stocks. They bet against them.
Right.
As soon as the cultural hype fades, there are no fundamental earnings to support those high stock prices, and the entire thematic basket just collapses.
That makes total sense. And then we have the third bucket, which honestly seems like the most dangerous one, leveraged single stock funds.
Oh, yes. The mathematical wealth destroyers.
Right. These are ETFs designed to give you like 2 times the daily return of a single volatile stock, like a 2x NVIDIA or 2x MicroStrategy. And the piece makes the point that unless you happen to buy the 2x NVIDIA fund the exact day before a massive uninterrupted supercycle,
which is basically impossible to time.
Right. Then these funds just mathematically destroy your money.
Yeah. The underlying math here is brutal. It's a mechanism called volatility decay. Or beta slippage.
Okay, how does that work?
Well, a leveraged fund resets its leverage every single day. So imagine you have $100 in a normal stock and it drops 10%. You have $90.
Right, simple enough.
To get back to even, back to 100, you need an 11% gain.
Right.
But if you have a 2x leveraged fund and the underlying stock drops 10%, your fund drops 20%.
Ouch. Okay, so now I only have $80.
Exactly. And to get back to your original 100 from 80, you don't need a 20% gain. You need a 25% gain.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So in a choppy market that just zigzags up and down, that daily math slowly grinds your principal down to zero, even if the underlying stock ends the year totally flat.
That is wild. So thematic funds and leveraged single stock products are basically financial surfboards designed for a wave that has already crested.
That's a great way to look at it.
But to predict exactly how hard that wave is going to crash, anti-gravity looked at the temperature of the market. Like, they measured exactly how hot a specific sector was in the 12 months before the ETF launched, just to see how that prior momentum impacted the first year return.
And this reveals the exact precise mechanism of the capital destruction we're talking about. They categorize the launches into 3 temperatures.
Okay, let's hear them.
First, you have cold sectors. These are rare. This is when an ETF launches into a sector that was actually down an average of 19% in the prior year.
Which has to be incredibly difficult for Wall Street to market, right? No one wants to talk about a losing sector.
Exactly. But if you buy them, they are highly successful. The data showed a median forward return of positive 23.6%.
Because you're buying at the floor. The hype premium has been entirely wiped out.
Right. Then you have warm sectors, which were up anywhere from 0 to 30% prior to launch. These are your boring, standard funds that roughly just track the market.
Nothing crazy.
Nothing crazy. But the real meat of the data is in the hot sectors. These are sectors that were up more than 30% prior to launch, averaging an insane 83.8% run-up before the ETF even existed.
An 83% run-up. That's when it's on the front page of every website.
Exactly. This is where Wall Street deploys the massive marketing budgets. Huh? Where retail investors plow in their retirement savings and where the results are absolutely devastating.
What were the numbers?
The median return for these hot launches was negative 9.2%, with over half of them posting negative returns.
Wow. So why does a massive run-up reliably trigger a post-launch crash?
To understand that, we have to talk about how financial flow works. We have to talk about exit liquidity.
Okay, the hype tax. Explain exit liquidity because this is a huge concept.
Sure. When a sector is absolutely scorching hot, say it's up 80% to 200% over the last year, the launch of a dedicated retail ETF is a culminating event of that speculative cycle.
The grand finale.
Yes, because the institutional money, the hedge funds, the early venture capital, they bought those underlying stocks 2 years ago.
Right, they're already up massive.
Exactly. So when the new ETF is created, it has to buy millions of shares of those specific companies to actually build the fund. And who do you think they are buying those shares from?
Wait, they're buying them from the institutions who are cashing out at the top.
Precisely. They are buying them from the smart money that is exiting. The institutions lock in their massive gains, and the newly minted ETF, which is funded directly by retail retirement accounts, is left holding the bag at maximum valuation.
So it's like, imagine standing outside a wildly exclusive, incredibly crowded nightclub. You've been waiting in line for, like, 2 years. Finally, the bouncer unclips the velvet rope, lets you and all your friends in. You're thrilled.
You finally made it.
Right. But what you don't realize is that the party peaked 3 hours ago. The VIPs are leaving out the back door, and the club is charging a credit card to pay their bar tab on the way out.
That is the exact underlying market mechanism. You are the exit liquidity. You are literally paying a premium to relieve early investors of their risk.
That is so dark. And you know, a 9% median drop for these hot sectors, it might not sound apocalyptic to a casual investor. Like, it's a bad year, but markets recover.
Right. A 9% point-to-point return doesn't seem world-ending.
Yeah, just looking at January 1st to December 31st. But that hides the actual agonizing reality of holding these funds. We have to talk about the maximum drawdown, the pain trade.
Because returns tell you where you ended up, but the maximum drawdown tells you how terrifying the ride was. It measures the absolute largest drop from the peak price to the lowest valley during that first year.
And the numbers here are terrifying. The average niche ETF across the entire 83-fund data set experienced a negative 34.8% maximum drawdown in its first year.
A third of your money, gone.
And for those hot sector launches, the average drawdown was a staggering negative 39.9%, almost 40%.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you have to consider the mechanics of retail psychology here. You watch a sector go up 150%. Your friends are bragging at dinner about their incredible paper gains.
The FOMO is real.
The FOMO is so real. Finally, Wall Street launches an ETF that lets you buy the entire theme in one click. You give in, you invest. And then over the next 6 months, you just watch your portfolio bleed out by 40%.
Oh, man.
Most normal human beings simply cannot mechanically or emotionally stomach that kind of sustained loss.
Right. The pain of loss aversion kicks in. They panic.
Exactly. They capitulate. They sell at the local bottom just to make the emotional pain stop. And by doing that, they lock in a catastrophic permanent loss. The abstract one-year return number never captures that deep behavioral penalty, buying the top and getting shaken out at the absolute bottom.
I was looking at the specific funds tracked in this analysis, and the examples of this capital destruction are genuinely hard to even look at.
Let's hear some of them.
Okay, take MSTU. This is a 2x leveraged MicroStrategy ETF.
Yeah.
It launched in September 2024. Now, MicroStrategy, as a company, had already functionally abandoned its original software business to become this leveraged proxy for buying Bitcoin.
Right. Right. They're essentially a Bitcoin holding company now.
And the stock had already run up almost 300%. So Wall Street stepped in and said, hey, let's put 2x daily leverage on a stock that is already structurally acting like a leveraged crypto derivative.
A recipe for disaster.
Absolute disaster. The result was a negative 97.6% maximum drawdown. It essentially vaporized the capital of anyone who held it through the volatility.
Because the volatility decay we discussed earlier guaranteed that outcome. It wasn't a flaw in the product. The product performed exactly as the math dictated it would.
And then look at AMDL, the 2x leveraged AMD ETF. It launched right at the local peak in March 2024, right after AMD had run up 153%, chasing the whole NVIDIA AI hype. From its peak to its trough, it dropped 81.8%.
Ouch.
And it's not just tech. Look at HYDR, a hydrogen ETF. It launched in July 2021 after clean energy tech just soared globally. But as soon as macroeconomic conditions changed, you know, interest rates started rising.
Capital for speculative, unprofitable clean energy dried up overnight.
Exactly. The ETF imploded. It suffered a negative 60% drawdown in just 6 months.
So if this correlation between a hot launch and an immediate devastating drawdown is this mathematically strong, we really have to ask, why does the market keep supporting these products? Why do retail investors keep funding them?
Because Wall Street is incredibly adept at timing peak human greed. And there's absolutely no better case study for this than the year 2021.
Oh, 2021.
The ultimate trap.
It really was. Just set the scene. The government is pumping trillions of dollars of stimulus into the system. Retail traders are locked at home with zero commission trading apps. Financial physics basically ceased to exist for a year.
And Wall Street responded by launching 15 flagship niche ETFs right into the teeth of that peak narrative saturation.
Yep. And every single thematic category launched in 2021 underperformed the market. They lost an average of 44% in their first year.
The 2021 vintage is the ETF as exit liquidity complex operating in its absolute purest form. If we examine the Hall of Shame from that year, the mechanics are incredibly revealing.
Walk us through some of the big ones. Okay, take BITO, BITO, the ProShares Bitcoin Strategy ETF.
Mm-hmm.
It launched when Bitcoin was hovering around like $62,000. It became the fastest ETF in history to reach $1 billion in assets. It hit that mark in just 2 days.
2 days.
2 days. And it literally marked the exact top of the crypto cycle. It fell 71.77% in its first year.
But what's fascinating there is how it lost money, right? Even when Bitcoin started to stabilize.
Yes. The mechanism there is crucial. The SEC wouldn't allow a spot Bitcoin ETF at the time, meaning the fund couldn't just go out and buy actual Bitcoin to hold.
Right.
They had to buy Bitcoin futures contracts. Now, a futures contract has an expiration date. So every single month, the ETF had to sell the expiring contract and buy the new one for the next month.
Okay.
But in a bullish market, the next month's contract is always priced slightly higher. This is a condition called contango.
Yeah.
So because they were constantly selling lower and buying higher just to maintain their position, the fund bled cash every single month.
Wow. Death by a thousand cuts.
Exactly. All funded by retail investors who just wanted an easy way to get exposure to crypto.
A masterful trapping of retail capital. And then, oh man, there was BUZZ, the social sentiment ETF.
Oh, BUZ.
This was heavily promoted by Dave Portnoy during the whole meme stock frenzy. The underlying mechanism of the fund was literally to scrape the internet and buy stocks that had highly positive social media buzz.
Which is just a fundamentally flawed strategy.
Right. I mean, think about the mechanics of that. If you are buying a stock because everyone on Reddit and Twitter is already celebrating their gains, you are buying the consensus. You are buying the bags from the early movers who are cashing out.
Okay.
The fund just ground downward relentlessly. And the aftermath even resulted in a $1.75 million SEC fine for undisclosed promotional arrangements.
We also have METV, the Metaverse ETF. Perfectly mistimed to launch right around Facebook's disastrous corporate pivot to the name Meta.
Oh, that timing was incredible.
It sucked in $800 million from retail investors who were suddenly terrified of missing out on digital real estate. And then it promptly suffered a 54% drawdown as the entire narrative just collapsed into a cultural punchline.
Right.
The lesson here is structural. By the time an investment narrative is so universally understood and culturally resonant that Wall Street can successfully market an ETF around it, the actual mechanics of the profitable trade are already dead.
You would think a collective 44% loss across the board would teach the market a lesson, but it didn't.
No, the machine doesn't stop. It just pivots to the new narrative.
Exactly. The 2024 cohort followed the exact same playbook. Instead of the metaverse and cannabis, 2024 gave us GLP-1 weight loss drug ETFs, funds with tickers like OZM and THNR. And they launched right as pharmaceutical giants like Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly stalled out after historic multi-year runs.
We also got highly complex AI-covered call funds.
Yep, and the result. The 2024 niche cohort averaged a negative 16.3% return, dramatically underperforming the broader, boring index funds.
There is, however, one lone exception in the 2024 class, and its success perfectly proves the underlying rule.
Oh, the nuclear one?
Yes. NUKZ, the Range Nuclear Renaissance ETF. It launched in January 2024 and returned nearly positive 95% in its first year.
Wait, why did a thematic ETF actually work so well?
Because of the sector temperature at the time of launch. NUKZ launched before the massive structural tailwinds of AI data center power demands hit the front pages of the mainstream press.
So it was early.
Very early. It launched when the nuclear sector had seen a modest 34% run-up over the previous year, so it was categorized as warm, not scorching hot. The creators of the fund weren't chasing a peak, saturated narrative. They were early to an emerging structural shift. They front-ran the consensus rather than packaging it.
Which brings us all the way back to today and the newly minted DDRAM ETF that kicked off this whole analysis.
Right. Let's look at the signs.
So what does this all mean for DDRAM? Let's apply the mechanics we've just decoded. Does it trigger the structural warning signs? Number one, is it a highly concentrated subsector? Yes. Memory chips are an incredibly narrow, highly cyclical slice of the broader semiconductor industry.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, is it launching after a massive run? Yes, SK Hynix has tripled and Micron doubled in the lead up to this product.
Yep, the hype tax is there.
Number three, is there peak narrative saturation? Absolutely. The idea that high bandwidth memory is the bottleneck for AI is arguably the single most consensus trait in all of technology right now.
Everyone knows it.
And number four, does it have a highly appealing retail ticker? Yes. Mm-hmm. Securing the DRAM ticker symbol is a masterstroke of marketing.
Now, obviously, none of this mathematically guarantees that the DRAM fund will lose money in the long term. I mean, generative AI might truly be a once-in-a-century infrastructure build-out.
Mm.
Early buyers might get lucky and ride a secondary wave.
Sure, it's possible.
But investing isn't about hoping for luck. It's about playing the base rate probabilities. And across 83 thematic launches over a full decade, the structural probability heavily dictates that when Wall Street builds a dedicated retail product around a scorching hot theme, you are buying infinitely closer to the cyclical ceiling than the floor.
You are statistically betting against the house.
You are.
So the next time you are scrolling through your brokerage app and you see this incredible, perfectly curated thematic ETF that matches the exact trend every single person on your social media feed is talking about, just pause.
Take a breath.
Yeah. Take a long, hard look at why it has suddenly become so incredibly easy for you to buy it. If you are buying the absolute peak of consensus, you are paying the premium to serve as someone else's exit door.
I want to leave you with a final thought to ponder, something that builds on the underlying mechanics we've mapped out today. If public market ETFs are increasingly designed structurally and chronologically to turn retail investors into late-stage exit liquidity, where is the actual price discovery happening today?
That is the big question.
Where is the early stage growth occurring? Are public markets simply no longer the place to find the next big thing before the rest of the crowd does?
It really makes you wonder. If you want to find the band playing in the garage, you can't be standing in line at the stadium souvenir stand. Keep learning, keep questioning, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.